Hey, folks, Tacky Talk time. State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is joining us post-Thanksgiving. Tacky, how are you?
Hey Joe, happy post-Thanksgiving, everybody. It's been a very busy weekend for myself. I suspect I'm not unique in that matter.
It's just everybody's fridges are now full of leftovers. That's right.
Well, it's a good time. I don't think anybody wants to be outdoors longer than they have to right now.
I know, all of a sudden, December and we're dead winter here.
Well, it was like 4 weeks ago or so that we were talking about a balmy fall day. Stretching into November, and now winter has shown up, and it looks like first snowfall is coming in 24 or 48 hours.
Yeah, not a lot around here, but it's not far away, so it's knocking on our doorstep.
It is. If you watch some national news, because again, you guys all know I do the 6 and 6:30 news whenever possible. I mean, there's like all kinds of weather events. So it was like all these horrible stories about impacts of hurricanes and tornadoes, and now the big story is snowstorms moving through the Midwest into northern New York.
No, I do not want to be living in upstate New York right now, or even Pennsylvania for that matter. They got walloped.
They got walloped. Yeah, it was definitely one of those things. It always seems like a bad weather event is like a regular part of like the nightly news.
It's true. It's true. So, did you, how was your festivities for Thanksgiving and then all the stuff that happened in Quincy over the weekend?
Yeah, no, I was busy. Thanksgiving for us was on Saturday because of scheduling conflicts. So in some way, this is not a bad thing in the sense that Friday morning grocery shopping is very easy. There's nobody really in the grocery store on Friday
No,
morning.
they're all at the malls.
Yeah, it's actually great on that front. But it is also a restocking problem on Friday morning because they close Thanksgiving Day to supermarkets.
Right.
There was a little bit of a restocking issue as you're in the midst of the restocking trying to shop, which is fine. I mean, it's not a problem. But you have to be aware that you have to be a bit more patient if you're going to go grocery shopping in the daytime during Black Friday, just the nature of how that works. So, I had to cook a meal for 14 on Saturday, which took, a prep time of Thanksgiving Day all the way through Saturday, which in case you wondered, the menu involved the cheesecake, doing a mint garlic crusted rack of lamb. So there were seven of those racks, 8 pounds worth of roasted Chinese style roasted pork, like an instant pot full. So it's like 8 cups plus of an oxtail tamarind soup, which is called singagang. It's a type of Filipino soup. And then I made some Japanese potatoes. Japanese yams with garam masala. So it's kind of this Indian Japanese mixture plus some standard mashed potatoes and green beans. And I had to make a sauce for the lamb. There's a mustard, sweet and sour mustard sauce that goes in the lamb. So, and pickles. I had to do pickles a week before because people like my pickles. It's a kind of a Chinese Japanese style pickles where the brine is actually more sugary than sour. So it's more of a sweet pickle. So
Yeah, it's a very international menu.
it was very exhausting, and it was a long few days on my feet, just standing at the sink, just prepping the lamb, and then you got to stand and sear, and then you got to watch the oven for the pork, and you got to let everything rest, and you got to time it all correctly, and try different things, and I got those tin foil trays that can roast in. It has some internal ability to drain fat out. I actually burned my hand a little bit because I didn't
Oh,
grill it
jeez.
correctly, and I got pork fat on my hand. And pork fat in your hand, even through a oven mitt, hurts a lot. I'm just like,
It's we're gonna have to do a separate cooking with Tacky program someday.
well, in ways you can hurt yourself.
Yes, that's right. Here's Tacky in the emergency room.
When Quincy Hospital is around, I used to be not a frequent visitor, but I spent enough time in that emergency room. So,
let's not do that anymore.
no, let's not do that anymore. There is no Quincy Hospital for me to sit in. I was going to be at the condominiums waiting to be let in somewhere. But the but no, it was for me again. Try to be careful, but things still happen in the kitchen, and that's kind of work. So I didn't make the parade on Saturday because by the time I even got done with cleanup, I was dead on my feet. My back was actually killing me. Even standing around that long in a stove will hurt you eventually.
Yeah, it was a nice parade though. Did you watch it on TV?
I was still asleep.
Oh, okay. Well, you can see it anytime. It's on our channel. It's on our website for all eternity.
Yeah, I'll watch some bits and pieces of it when I get to it. No, I just wasn't up for it, folks. Just after it was on, I actually did not get to mopping the floors until Monday morning. I was just that wiped out, so I didn't even get to the full getting the grease out of everything, so to speak. I got through most of the cooking and then proceeded to have to do most of the cleaning actually Monday morning in the kitchen. So, get the grease off the stove, move the various kitchen items back to the original place. And a lot of that was actually dealt with first thing Monday morning. And of course, I also had meetings immediately after the morning, after I started that meetings right away on actually a conference call, not a video for a change. I actually had a conference call and then proceeded with video meetings. And I also had dinner with the new representative from Lowell, Tara Hunt. He replaces Ronnie Mum up in Lowell. And it was a good first meet and greet with him on Monday night. So, yeah, it was right back into the saddle. So I did, folks, take a break because I didn't go to the parade. But starting out the morning Monday, cleaning the kitchen, and go straight into work.
Yeah. So a lot of there's been some ceremonial bill signings, I know, over the past couple of days or so, but it's kind of quiet right now, right?
Yeah, we're in the dead zone. I mean, elections are over, the holidays are here. Obviously, I've talked in the past how my colleagues, have a lot of Christmas events to go to. Their Christmas parades can be near to Christmas, unlike ours, as well as all the other holiday events. Like I said, I'm always thankful that the majority of our major events are done prior to Christmas itself. So it's actually a lot quieter for elects here in Quincy compared to other cities. We're still going to be moving some bills around as we go forward. The consensus budget hearings are starting soon, which will discuss the consensus revenue numbers for FY26, actually. No, yeah, FY26.
Yeah.
26. I can't believe I'm saying that. So, yeah, FY26 consensus. Saw in the papers that we did a closeout budget for FY24. There was some shortfalls that we filled in by taking the capital gains money. We re-diverted some of that away from rainy day. Rainy days at over $8 billion. You got a $52 billion budget, $8 billion. Use the 6 month rule regarding if you run out of money. We're in pretty good shape, folks. I mean, almost 12%+ of your rainy day fund is represented in your budget. And of course, those federal reimbursements as part of those transfers. So it wasn't all just taxpayer dollars because the feds don't pay us on time. Big shock, folks. So as a result, and there's always transfers of the fact that we kind of loan the Fed some money to keep Fed programs going. And it's all in the end of all accounting and reconciliation. So, but yeah, no, we're actually, I got this question asked yesterday. Despite this transfer, we are actually in a very strong position. I just think people have to temper their expectation because wage growth is legitimately slowing down. It's going to go, I wouldn't say stop one, but it's going to reach us closer and closer to a low growth on a monthly basis. And of course, we're an income tax driven state with the two-tier flat tax between the millionaire's tax and the standard everyone else that isn't a millionaire tax. And obviously, when you make more money, the government gets more money. And if you don't, then the government gets stagnated revenue too.
Yeah, be curious. I'm going to watch unemployment. That's something to watch, I think. It's important to keep an eye on that, see where that goes. Right now, it's still historically low, I know.
Yeah, it's actually been 1% lower than the Fed's. That is not going to continue. That is unrealistic. I think I got to look to myself because the new numbers on the federal unemployment hits this Friday
Yes.
for
Yep.
the prior month, unadjusted, because it's the month after that, they adjust the numbers for a final accurate count. So, I mean, the state should have a similar unadjusted number coming out in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to tell you that the Fed unemployment rate is probably going to stay relatively steady, like 4.2 zone. State's probably going to be like 3.3, 3.4.
Okay. Yeah. So it's ticked up a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, but for the sake of economists, 3% means full employment.
Full employment, right? Yeah, essentially, because it's a rotating basis, right? On the unemployment rolls, people come on, people go off.
Yeah, and I was actually talking to my financial advisor because I'm like, when can I retire? And we were discussing about the fact that we're at record levels of credit card debt.
No, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, we're reaching past the great financial crisis of 08 regarding credit card debt. And people are missing payments on credit cards and car loans. The big one is car loans right now. It has not reached home loans, but car loans are the ones that are highest level delinquency at the moment. And we'll see if everyday consumers are able to keep up on their spending habits.
Yeah, well, I read somewhere that lottery sales actually took a sharp downturn recently.
Yeah, that's a little surprising. Believe it or not, the lottery historically has always been very recession resistant. Even during COVID, when the restaurants and bars were shut down, and the bars and restaurants opened back up, Keno numbers started rocketing back to where they were prior. I know there were other factors. You had stimulus money, people had savings, unemployment benefits, and so forth. Again, there was a lot of other factors. But I mean, people were obviously eager to get back into restaurants and bars once when they reopened. And Keno's like 10% of all the revenue of the lottery. So you also don't have a lot of mega jackpots right now. It appears that no one really cares until you hit $750 million, which I find.
It's true. Oh, it's only a mere 30 million. I won't bother with that.
It's a very lottery consumer behavior I find peculiar because we're both old enough to remember when the Mega Bucks hit $1 million jackpot, everybody couldn't stop buying a lottery ticket.
Now that's just pennies.
And I was irrelevant. You get a $1 billion jackpot, people wouldn't even bother with it.
Yeah, it's and ironically, your chances are better when the jackpots are lower because because fewer people are playing, so there's a better odds that you win something.
Well, I mean, the reality is getting hit by lightning is more probable than winning the lottery still.
Well, there is that, yeah, but it's more fun.
We again, this show does not endorse gambling, nor do we encourage this behavior.
That's right.
We're just informing you of the current circumstances. I am not doing the advertising for the state treasurer about how this helps our
No,
cities.
we don't want to go down that
We're not going down that road. But the lottery money profits does go to city and towns in form of local aid. So that's in case you're wondering what it is. It's off budget for the purposes of our budget in State House. It's not part of the main budget because it's off budget. So it'd be
Okay.
great.
Well, that's good to know, actually. Okay.
So when we talk about that $52 billion, yeah, that includes lottery money profits, but that's one of the off budget items. It's complete pass through straight to cities and towns based on the lottery formulas. Same thing, for example, Medicare, Medicaid money you get from federal government. The mass health money passes through us straight to you. As the mass health beneficiaries, so it's an interesting way of operating a system where your big pool of money actually isn't your big pool of money. Large hunks of it is actually pre-committed out of there.
Right. Yeah. It's much like a municipal budget. There's, contractual agreements, pension agreements. A lot of it is predetermined.
Yeah, we have a lot of the same issues that cities and towns do on that front, 100%. We do have some other things that are different. Like, for example, Mass Health is different. The SNAP program, food stamps, is a federal program, not a state program. There's also a pass-through account for us. We actually administer those accounts. The federal government pays us to administer those accounts,
Right.
which creates some interesting questions if the government shuts down around Christmas time because there's some reason the news isn't talking about the continuing appropriation resolutions in Congress that are coming due soon. And apparently
Yes, I
nobody.
saw that this morning. Yeah.
Yeah, the news kind of brushed that over lately. They haven't really kind of like, hey, oh, by the way, the government could shut down over the holidays. That affects us in the sense that if it goes on too long, we won't get our federal reimbursements timely, which means state tax dollars are going to have to float federal programs until we get our reimbursements.
Right. Yep. So it's something to keep an eye on for sure, and hopefully it does not happen.
But you notice it says state tax dollars float federal programs. You don't hear federal programs floating state
Oh,
programs.
no, they're not going to do that.
Yeah,
No, there's you states, you're on your own. We've got our own problems to deal with.
it's a federalism thing, but yes. So, I mean, this is one of those things that it's great talking to you on this because people tend to not understand these very intricate dynamics between the state and federal government, and how your tax dollars are actually kind of supporting federal government in some ways when the federal government's having its, political crisis in DC.
it's hissy fits essentially, right?
And we're fairly stable. I mean, we're a very stable state government. Most state governments, there are a few exceptions, Illinois comes to mind, are not, they're all pretty stable. I know there's lunacy. You've seen it in the news about, like the Wisconsin legislature flees the state, to prevent a caucus and a quorum call and things like that. But those are not the norm. Those are the rarities.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, as we've talked about before, it's one of the few states that has a full-time legislature, right?
Well, I'm here talking to you, and I'll hopefully believe I'm working because I'm telling you what I'm doing.
Right.
But just that the volume shifts from month to month, day to day. And this is one of those folks when I meet newly electeds like I did on Monday night. It's 8 and 9 to 5 job. People have this perception of a 9 to 5 job. There's vacation time, there's sick time. I don't have vacation and sick time. It's all at my discretion. If I choose to come in ill, I come in ill. I get paid either way.
Right.
And the firefighters' retirement, Quincy firefighters' retirement this year. You all saw me that were there. If you're a firefighter listening at the dinner, I sounded like the kiss of death. My throat was shot, and I could barely muster, and I
No.
could only stay about an hour and change because I was literally too exhausted to continue. I'm sure that people would be very forgiving if I couldn't come, but this is also a job where it's very difficult to explain to folks when you're actually sick.
Right.
And one of my colleagues, Susan. Clifford Gifford, Susan Gifford, who died, former rep from, she lost her primary, so former rep from Mansfield or rep from Mansfield lost her seat in primary. I mean, we didn't know she had cancer.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah, and she died about 2 weeks before Election Day, and none of
I
us
see.
knew. I mean, people's lives are their lives, your private lives. You don't have to share your life with me if you don't want to share what you don't want to share. And that's your right. I don't pry into other people's personal business at the State House. But it's also very sad because, as I say to folks, I mean, you only have one opportunity to meet folks. And when they're gone, they're gone. You don't get to meet them again. So
Right. Yep.
you just don't know. And just because you don't see an elected around someplace, it doesn't mean that the real life isn't, something real life is happening. But, I'm not going to sit here and, do a 20,000 person mailer. Informing people of my various health conditions and family problems.
Right. No, obviously we're not going to do that, certainly. We do want to thank a viewer slash listener for reaching out to you, Tacky, and let you know that that person listens and or watches or does both to the podcast. So thank them for that.
Yeah, I read your email. It's good to hear from folks that actually do listen to myself and Joe and provide some educational benefit, we hope, and maybe a couple of laughs. We don't want to make this too serious and help people understand what's happening. And like I said, every show we do encourage people to write Joe questions. If you want Joe to interview me and do his homework and take me on. But also great to have people contact me directly with follow-up questions. So would you like me to try to answer this one on air?
Yes, absolutely. That's what we're all about here, for sure.
All right, this is the one that is causing some confusion with certain folks. So we're back to question one on the ballot. I was
It's your favorite topic, Tacky.
so tired of ballot questions regarding
Well,
this topic.
the only reason I like to talk about it is because of its overwhelming approval by the electorate during Election Day.
Well, I mean, you asked me at the beginning what it was going to be like. I was like, yeah, we're going to get killed. I mean,
No, I remember. I know, and that's exactly what happened.
sometimes my predictions are right, folks. I do actually, have a sense where voters are going. Sometimes it is a toss-up, which was the case in a few votes was a little closer. But so question one for a refresher course, everybody. We'll try to see if I can do this in an organized manner, my thoughts, because we're doing this free-floating. Question one is about changes the state law of the auditor's powers to allow her to audit the legislature. That adds to her legislature, the legislature, actually the general court, as part of a group to an audit. Under the statute, the auditor has specific entities, very specific entities, which she can audit, and what she can audit, and how she can audit. And in case you're wondering, auditors are what you think they are. It is a financial audit. Okay. People email me and have this real interesting misconception about what an auditor is. An auditor is what everyone thinks it is. It is a audit, financial audit done by an accountant. Thus, the auditor operates an office with many accountants. Okay.
Okay, so looking at money spent, money taken in, right?
And the state auditor says a lot of stuff that has nothing to do with money. So we're not going to criticize. I'm just going to state a fact. Okay. So the state auditor is a constitutional officer. Let's make that as true as well. If you look at the state constitution, it has the auditor, the secretary of state, the treasurer, as constitutional positions, which is not always the case in every state. Some states don't have an elected treasurer. They actually just have a comptroller, or in some states have an elected comptroller. Or in New York, they have electric comptrollers too. So there's different states does different things. But for 24 states does have an elected state auditor. The Constitution is also very quiet about what the job descriptions of these positions are. The governor and lieutenant governor, in particular, have very clear job descriptions as well as the state legislature. So in the absence of a clear directive by the Constitution, the legislature basically writes your job descriptions, and we can change those things around, which the legislature in many decades have done so. So the question comes up on this and whether or not under the Constitution, as a member of the executive branch, because you're either the executive, legislative, or judiciary, you're one of the three, because even the governor's council is actually a type of legislative branch when you think about it. Those who don't realize we have this very ancient thing called the governor's council, which does some actually very interesting things, including appointing judges and clerks of courts, as well as notaries. So why is
But
that?
they're elected positions, yeah.
The elected positions on your ballot, and the eight of them divide around the state every 2 years. And they're relevant to this conversation, believe it or not. So the attorney general, when this question was presented to her for approval to put before the ballot, wrote an opinion that this could have constitutional problems regarding executive branch and legislative branch conflict, because separation of powers keeps everybody from each other, but it's the legislative branch that sets the laws on what executive branches should or should not be doing pursuant to the legislature's basic demands, right? We write a law, we're telling them to do something. And so, as I always say, the legislature legislates, executive branch executes. And the state auditor, by nature in the Constitution, is part of an executive branch function. So the voters obviously passed this overwhelmingly, 70-30%. And there's been some social media posts, which you want to see a good editorial, read, go see the WCVB Channel 5 editorial from the beginning of the month of the November, which plays out really well about their thoughts on these various social media posts. But the ballot questions have not actually become law yet. And that's kind of the misconception at the beginning of the month, because the certification votes doesn't occur until all the votes are counted, and absentee ballots don't come in until 10 days after election day.
Okay.
So you actually have absentee, everyone forgets we have absentee ballots suddenly. So absentee ballots actually have to 10 days after election day reach cities and clerk's offices to be counted. And the Secretary of State will give the official count in the month of December, which should be right around this time period, the beginning of.
Yes.
And then this is where it gets interesting, because ballot questions have to be certified, and the certification process involves the Governor's Council, I believe.
Oh, I did not know that. Okay.
Yeah, the Governor's Council has to certify the votes.
That's interesting.
When they certify and everything else, it's a bit of a mystery to me, because I've never seen anybody challenge certification of votes. It's almost a procedural matter.
Right.
So when the Governor's Council meets, and there'll be some of the final meetings of the Governor's Council, because there'll be a new Governor's Council sworn in on the second day of January, they will certify votes. Now, there is like some real interesting constitutional questions here about whether the Governor's Council can certify a law that affects another branch of government. It comes to separation of powers question again. And so the House of Representatives decided under Speaker Mariano to see if we could try to not address the question directly, but provide a situation where we give an opportunity for the auditor to pick our auditor. So the legislature both branches does do an independent financial audit. We have an outside auditor come in and do the books. It's inside the rules. And people think about the rules as the functioning of the chamber. It is. It dictates when we go into session, how amendments are filed, the dress code, all that stuff. But it also addresses human resources and addresses the business agent and the appointment of our general counsel. So the rules are not just strictly about legislative process. It's actually about the operations of the body. Branches have their individual rules and operations, which includes in the rules and always been there as far as I've known, my time to be in this place, to include a financial audit chosen by a house business office and the house counsel. So the lawyer and the business office picks the auditor. We changed our rules effective next year because the fiscal year is already halfway through to give the state auditor the ability to pick our auditor. So the state auditor can choose the independent auditor. We will accept that choice. The house will pay for that auditor and then report the results of that independent auditor. And why do you want an independent auditor? Because you want an unbiased audit. Because that's the point of an independent auditor. You want an unbiased audit.
But
So,
does that comply with the ballot question?
no, not directly. Because the ballot question gives direct power to the state auditor, to the audit herself. The legislature has always done their audits through an independent third party that is not part of the legislature nor part of the executive branch. This will give the state auditor the ability to pick an independent auditor that is neither the executive branch nor the legislative branch's person, so to speak. So it's actually the auditor's person they pick from the outside independents, but we'll pay for it as the house. So
Okay, how much is
it
that
does.
going to cost?
It wouldn't shouldn't cost more than what we normally pay anyway.
Right.
Oh,
Okay.
unless state auditor picks somebody that's outrageous, which could be entirely possible. And then,
So, and but does the ballot question specify what the audit needs to entail?
well, the general court rules is very simple. It's a financial audit following the standards set by the U.S. Comptroller's Office standards of government auditing.
Right, but this ballot question is separate from that. What how is it different?
It's different because it's, again, who gets to pick the auditor, right? In the case of the ballot question, the state auditor wants to audit herself. We, in our case, it gives the auditor ability to choose a third party, unbiased, independent auditor.
Okay,
So
and
we'll get an audit either way. It's just that the us not actually addressing the separation of powers, we don't try to address that. We don't actually try to address the ballot question directly, but we are addressing the issue of the fact that we do already do have an unbiased separate audit. I mean,
I get
which
that,
is
but
something that message, by the way, is lost in this message we've been using on the fact that we do have audits has been lost on the media. We don't talk about this. We've expressed frustration internally about the fact that no media outlet has said the fact that we pick an external independent auditor. We do not have a house auditor. We're not the city council, which has a city auditor. Most cities and towns have a city auditor. We do not have that. And and even then, the city auditor is auditing the executive branch, the council's auditor.
Yes,
They're
yeah.
not auditing the city council. So if the council wants to be audited, they would have to get a third party auditor. They can't use their own, right? So same principle here. We're using not a government auditor, doing a third party. So we're going to give the rule change gives the state auditor to pick the third party auditor.
Okay, all right. But does ballot question number one specify what that audit has to entail, or is it the same as if as the audit that you already have?
It's about the same because
Okay.
the state law requires the state auditor to use the standards set by the U.S. Comptroller.
Okay, all right.
And all the standard rules required under the ethics of audits. So the state auditor, believe it or not, is subject to all the audit ethics requirements that any auditor, even though she herself is not an auditor, the persons in the office are auditors, and they're subject to the rules of ethics from the board of accounting, the accounting board in the state that they have to comply with. And part of being a auditor is being unbiased.
Okay, so has she agreed to do this?
Well, we give her the option to do it. Whether she agrees or not is her choice. So the rules give her 30 days from fiscal year begins, basically notify that we need to do an audit. Would you like to pick an auditor? If she doesn't respond in 30 days, we go back to the traditional House Business Office and the counsel office, our attorneys, will choose the auditor to do the independent audit. If she does respond in 30 days, we'll accept her person that the firm that she recommends, and we're just going to do that. So they
I
will
see.
all be an audit. It's just that it's in the state auditor's board court to choose the third party independent auditor. That's all.
Yeah. Okay. So
So we don't address, we do not address the constitutional issue, we do not address the statute. This is purely rules function.
is it the same? Do you typically use the same auditor for every audit?
That I don't know because it has to be RFP.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, it's a low bid state, right?
Yeah, because it has to go out to bid.
Yeah, I understand. Okay. So I mean, the way you explain it, Tacky, it seems redundant. This ballot question seems to just do something that's already been happening.
Yeah.
Okay. Just want to make sure I understand.
Oh no, this is again the frustration the legislature have had with the big media because the media has been saying that it doesn't exist and it does. And the state auditor has been saying all kinds of things about what she likes to audit, which she actually does not have the power to audit currently. So there's a lot of like, again, I'm trying to be careful because it's like, look, I mean, you can read your social media posts, not me, and you can decide on your own. But I mean, I'm a constitutional person. So you guys have all learned this out. I'm a student of this business.
Yeah, no, it's good because this is what the podcast is all about, is digging down deep into these issues to get the facts out.
And this is unprecedented because we've never seen a situation to my memory, and I think a lot of people much older than I am were hunting through their databases, as well as the clerks and Secretary of State and the AG's offices are hunting for a precedent where a constitutional officer puts the ballot question on the ballot to change the constitutional officer's job.
Right.
We can't think of any time and supported by a PAC by said constitutional officer. So we can't remember the last time. It's like you going out and changing your own job description and paying a campaign to do it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
We've
Yeah.
never seen this because historically, as I said at the very beginning, constitutional officers' positions, job descriptions are dictated by the legislature.
Right. Yeah.
This one is put in front of the public, funded indirectly, because it's against the law in Massachusetts for elected officials to actually own a PAC. Supported, she supported a PAC that spent like hundreds of thousands of dollars to change her job. Now, if this is, no, let's go beyond this audit question.
Okay.
If this is a allowable precedent, that means the governor, the lieutenant governor, all of them at executive branch level could change their job description to the public and indirectly fund it themselves via PAC.
Wow, I hadn't thought of that, but that's a good point.
Yeah, this is a real quandary here because you're not changing a law like we've seen all ballot questions change the law in terms of how it affects the public, whether we talk about seat belts back in the 80s or more recently about decriminalizing and regulating psychedelics. Or addressing minimum wage. I mean, those are law changes. Those are public policies that are put that affects the public.
Right.
Even the millionaire's tax, had a constitutional problem because we're a flat state tax. You cannot change state law to have a dual tax system. You have to change the constitution. And even then, the public can't tell the legislature how to spend money specifically, meaning the governor, the public can't tell us how to like very narrowly tailored, like you must spend on, let's say, Joe Catalano. It has to be sufficiently broad enough the legislature has discretion. Then the courts have ruled on that. That is not a missive. That
Okay.
is
Yeah,
a
if you think
genuine
for the
touch base.
millionaire's tax, it was what, transportation and education?
Correct. But
Yeah.
before that, it was a very, the ad questions were super narrowly tailored to specific things,
Gotcha.
which interfered with legislative appropriation powers. But if it's actually large and vague enough, the Supreme Judicial Court said that's okay. That's the court has a lot of say in the matter. There is an interesting question here that is going to have to be brought up at some stage, I suspect, about whether a constitutional officer can bypass the legislature to the public and basically indirectly supported by a political action committee in the job. So let's give you a fun scenario. Let's say the lieutenant governor does not like the governor, which we've seen before, folks, if you know your political history in Massachusetts.
Yes, I can think of a couple. We won't name them, but yeah.
Yeah, we won't name them, but if you've been a good observer for the last 40 years, you should be aware of many situations where LGs and Gs don't get along. So, in theory, it could be entirely possible that the lieutenant governor could give him or herself new powers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Right? You could write a law because it's one of those constitutional positions that has a lot of vagueness. The job is to be the governor of governors out of state. And you oversee the governor's council. And then the rest of the job descriptions, like the governor's council, lieutenant governor oversees the seaport council. That is a legislative directive. We made her the chair of the governor's council. So I'm saying not governor's council, I'm sorry, the seaport council,
Seaport, yeah, and I know
Economic Development
Karen
Council.
Polito was here in Quincy many times in that role, yeah.
Correct. So, I mean, let's say the lieutenant governor wants to be chair of some other body and writes a very narrow law says lieutenant governor shall be the chair of XYZ.
Yeah, but that would never pass on a ballot question. Voters would never approve that. Would it have to go to a ballot question?
Yeah, if they want to bypass the legislature.
I don't
And
think
but
that
you'd
would
be
pass.
surprised. Yeah, they might get away with it if you run a good enough campaign.
Oh, that's concerning.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is an interesting constitutional question beyond the underlying question of question one. Should constitutional officers have the ability to run campaigns like any ballot question to change jobs? And if you have a dispute between constitutional officers, could you do a power grab?
Do you think this will end up in court eventually?
Yeah, it's got to end up in court at some point. I just don't know how it's going to get to court. The auditor had indicated initially that she's trying to pressure the attorney general to take the case in case we don't comply. I'm sorry, because we weren't compliant because there was no law yet, which is a whole other thing. You can't ask the AG to enforce a non-existent law because the certification of votes hasn't happened, which caused another huge confusion that's been put out in social media that's incorrect. You cannot enforce a law that has not been put in effect. You only can enforce a law after it's gone into effect. So it's like this massive social media blitz at the beginning of November saying that you have to comply with a law that doesn't exist yet because of certification of votes hasn't. So when you ask for the AG to do something for you, you have to wait till there's a non-compliance. Then you ask the AG. Then the AG can respond to your question whether the AG will take the case. Do not ask the AG when there's no law in place. And the AG, of course, doesn't need to respond yet because there's no reason to respond because that's not the question. So
Oi, wow, it's convoluted.
it's common sense, people. If it doesn't exist, you can't do something about it yet. Duh. I mean, common sense.
Would that lawsuit come from the legislature, do you think?
If and I don't know what's going to happen. We're going to have a brand new session. If there's a non-compliance issue, then you would have to sue the legislature because the non-compliant entity is the one that gets sued. And given the fact the auditor has already decided what she wanted to do, regardless of what we think at this point, we're going to get sued anyway. She's already. So at this point, it's like, well, you're going to do it anyway. Go for it. I mean,
And does that suit get paid for from taxpayer dollars?
well, a very good question because taxpayers did not pay for the ballot question. However,
Correct.
I will tell you, be honest, because you can look it up yourself. Her political campaign account paid for the political action committee, which is legal. You can use your campaign account to support political action committee. So those of you who donate to auditor was actually donating indirectly because she would take your money and send it over to the political action committee. Now, whether she can use tax dollars to do that is interesting. Again, separation of powers, because
Because the
the
legislature would have to approve that expenditure, right?
Well, not just that, but using tax dollars to cross the boundaries of separation of powers. But we'll go back to the traditional one everyone seems to know about. The AG and the governor controls state troopers, and so
Yes.
does the need to actually have a limited control of certain state troopers. So the governor controls the big super barracks, but the AG also has assigned state troopers too. Now, the legislature, and this can be relevant to what I'm going to talk about a little bit later on world events, the legislature cannot be stopped from going to the state house for official business, meaning it's a session for a vote. The constitutional prohibits that. You cannot use the governor's powers or police powers to stop me. So if I'm on the way to the state house, yeah, you can stop me for speed. We're not talking about dumb stuff, okay? You can't. But if you stop me for speeding and I got pulled over and like, okay, yeah, give me a ticket, but I'm on my way to sales to vote, okay? So they got to be expedited. They have to be expedient about ticketing me. But they can't hold me behind because there is a vote going to happen.
Yep, I understand. And like you say, this just happened in South Korea.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a sec.
Just we're getting close on time here, but
I
yeah,
know.
they had to scale the walls to get into the parliament building to take the vote.
Yeah, that's actually pretty scary. So why is that relevant? That's using state tax dollars, the state troopers, to stop me, a legislator, from doing my job.
What essentially keeping the people out of the people's house.
That's correct. Now, what auditor isn't stopping us to go vote? It does, again, cross the boundaries of separation of powers if she uses tax dollars to hire an attorney. Again, something for the court to decide, not me. But you can see the principle I'm getting at, where you're using state tax dollars to do that. The other example, quick, is COVID. The governor's emergency powers does not apply to the House and Senate. So when there's a snowstorm and the governor's declared state of emergency and non-essential personnel does not come to all work, the House and Senate does not comply with that. The House and Senate independently makes a decision on whether or not our own employees are going to come to work or not. And 99.9% of the time, we comply with the governor's emergency order. In the case of COVID, we had separate rules regarding what legislators and what conditions and when staff can come to the state house during COVID lockdown. But we control the chambers. The chambers open and closed at the will of each branch. The governor could not close the chambers. So there's again a separation of powers. Even though there were enormous emergency powers under COVID, he could not lock the doors to the legislature.
I understand. It's a great example, and it really puts it into perspective.
South Korea is a whole craziness. If you saw in the news, it's the first time we've seen a major democracy. I don't know if when back time, because they weren't even a true democracy in the 80s. It was military dictatorship. Declared martial law. The president declared martial law because of the claim that the parliament is now in the hands of North Korean, subverted by North Koreans. And basically decided to shut down the press, shut down the parliament, shut down free speech, shut down unions, shut down everything.
I was shocked when I saw that yesterday.
Yeah, and the military was trying to break through the parliamentarian doors and surround the parliamentary buildings, and parliamentarians had to sneak their way over walls and through gates and crash through military people to get inside their parliament building because under the law in South Korea, the parliament by majority vote can overturn martial law. I wonder why, folks, because this has happened before in South Korea back in the 80s. So South Korean constitution, including the one-term five-year president, is all designed around their past experience of dictators. The entire constitution, the entire thing is designed about bad experience with military dictators. So this was shocking because under modern democracy, which came into effect in the 80s after a whole bunch of protests and one dead military dictator at the dining room table, no joke, this is really how it happened in South Korea, and a whole lot of student protests. You know, the modern democracy is what you see today. We have like a one-term president for 5 years, four-year terms for the parliament on a rotating basis, and the parliament has enormous powers to remove presidents. And as you can see, to stop martial law from happening. However, the president clearly wanted to keep the parliamentarians from getting to parliament to form a quorum to reverse his power, which he used the military to do that. Screams dictator by any standard.
Yes. Yeah.
you want to use. And the fact that you're right, parliamentarians were climbing walls of their own parliament building trying to get in somehow, while other parliamentarians, because this was the dead of night, this was like in the middle of like 3 in the morning. I mean, it wasn't like there were staffers there. I mean, they themselves were holding doors against the military from breaking in.
Yeah, they're, I mean, truly, they're heroes.
Oh, these are heroes of democracy.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. I mean, they got to a quorum of 190 out of 300, because of quorum's like 151, and they banged this thing quick. And both political parties, the party of the president is in minority in parliament. He is frustrated by the fact that he is the second first president in history to have minority government in throughout his entire 5 years. And even his own minority government voted against him,
Right.
his own party, because it's an affront to democracy.
Yeah, it should be a wake-up call here when you see something like that happen.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, martial law hasn't been used in this country since the War of 1812. And even then, I mean, it was kind of wacky, obviously, because you had like a legit invasion. But even when you go back to World War II, you had emergency powers, but not martial law. And
Right.
even then, martial law was limited in scope. It was just Washington, D.C. At during like the 1800s, the federal government couldn't martial law states. They could only martial law their own stuff, which is basically Washington, D.C. You martial law states, governors are gonna like lose their minds.
It's why states maintain their own National Guard, right?
Yeah, and we have our own police force, and we have our own emergency services. We have
Right.
basically our standing militia, because we have our own sort of paramilitary.
Right.
You look at the county sheriffs, they got like big stuff, which again, we'll talk about that a different day.
Yes, yeah.
As we saw during the Boston bombing, I didn't realize that city cops and towns had this array of heavy firearms. Until the Boston bombing, because I honestly didn't know. And suddenly all this equipment I didn't realize we had that was always under lock and key made an appearance.
Yes, I think the Watertown police rolled out this armored vehicle that they had. Yeah.
Yeah, and Quincy cops had full automatic weapons, like the big guns, available. And I was like, are you kidding me? I didn't realize this was a thing. So yeah, I mean, we can debate about our friends having giant guns, but it is a paramilitary outfit. So and you're right, the Colonel National Guard is appointed by the governor, and the governor all governors have a variation of a military branch of some format from the days of militias. And
Right.
remind folks, back in the Civil War, the President Lincoln actually had to petition states for troops for the war. They couldn't conscript. It was the states who had to agree to give troops to Lincoln. If the state didn't want to participate, the federal government couldn't make them do it. It
Right.
wasn't until you got to World War II, you had more formal conscription in the modern military that we see today.
Right.
So yeah, if the president, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if this particular president decides to issue martial law, I promise you all 50 state governors will lose their minds.
Yeah, nobody likes to be told what to do by the federal government.
Yeah, and there'll be a massive amount of pushback by every state. And it is the policy of the United States to not use military personnel in domestic situations.
Absolutely. This has been fun. I hope we answered that that viewer's question. I think we did.
Yeah, it's a little convoluted question to answer because there's a lot of moving parts here. Going back to actually understanding the basics of the Constitution on, what it is and the different separation of powers, but also the fact that it doesn't change the law, number one, which is wrong in social media. It does not change. We did not change the law. We did not vote to change the law because there was no law to vote for anyway, because it was not in effect yet. Secondly, it is a rules change. And the legislature has enormous flexibility in its rules of how to operate it. Thirdly, there is an audit done normally. We do a third-party independent audit normally. We're just going to give that ability to the auditor to choose if the auditor chooses to take that opportunity to choose the auditor. And auditors need to be unbiased. It is part of the ethical requirements for auditing. Private businesses hire independent auditors. I'll give you a great one. Super Micro, company, got reported by one of the hedge fund companies that their auditor was problematic, and their own auditor quit because they felt that the company was not complying with the standards of auditing and was not giving information, was not doing, not complying with the unbiased nature of it. They were being biased. So Supermicro had to call emergency committees to investigate what's going on here and hire a new auditor that would be completely unbiased because the other one had questions about whether or not the unbiased approach was actually being done. So you can have more than one audit done by different auditors. Because now they're all independent of each other, but auditor feels that they've been conflicted because of their boss, or perhaps they have another business with you. They should get out, and another person who has no business or ties to you should be the one doing the auditing. Which again, kind of an interesting way of addressing separation of powers here, as well. But we don't address those constitutional questions directly. We don't change the law. We just change our rules. And she's going to sue us anyway. So at this point, you guys can guess what we're going to do, because if you're going to get sued no matter what, well, you guys have common sense listening, so you can guess what's going to happen next.
Stay tuned.
Again, common sense, people. I don't know why people look at social media and common sense goes out the window.
Well, that's for another show too. Hey, thanks, Dyke. That was fun.
Yeah, we hope that was helpful, Joe. And let's keep an eye on world events. France government's dissolving, German government dissolving, South Korea is all over the place. The Canadians are looking like they're heading for a parliamentary dissolution as well. It's a lot of instability in the world and on democracies right now. And sometimes it's meant to be because you need to change the government, like we do every election cycle. But it's unusual to have this many happening simultaneously.
Interesting. So
But
makes it.
Japan also had this too. They had a snap election, and the parliament is a minority party.
Oh, I didn't hear about that one. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's also one that was very shocking.
Yeah.
The majority party thought they could squeak that one out, and they just got ripped up. And now they're running a minority coalition government. So, yeah, I mean, we can, yeah, it's again, it's. Part of democracy is to change. People should have the right to change them. What's unusual is how many governments are happening simultaneously in a similar time frame. That's what's remarkable right now.
Makes us look pretty normal right now.
We're a very stable government. I don't know why people don't think that. The United
Well,
States,
it's coming up on 250 years, so that's pretty good.
well, also stable state governments. I mean, I know
True.
some a little bit. Peculiar, I have opinions about, but I mean, they also didn't have like martial law, RoboCop style, everything's falling apart and, some random warlord's running your state. I mean, it's a very stable government overall in this country. And I think people don't understand that. And it's good. It's good. You can debate about politics and people's political positions, but stability in government is good for all of us. And our ability to change this government in a smooth, well, hopefully smooth way, but smooth transition of government, regardless of what happens, creates an ability for us to have relatively safe lives. So, and we should never take that for granted because it's not the case everywhere.
Very true. It's very true. It's good to keep
So,
in mind with Pearl Harbor Day approaching.
Yes, the USS Salem Pearl Harbor Day, I believe 10 o'clock ceremony this Saturday. I believe there's like a little bit of a pre-ceremony like before that, but the ceremony is going to be attended. It's going to be a joint collaboration between Braintree and Quincy. Again, great kudos to the Quincy Veterans Council and Christine over there, our veterans agent, on putting these together. And we've had constituent services come through my office involving veterans, and our office has done a wonderful job at helping my office out, help constituents out on a bunch of questions ranging from benefits to direct assistance. I can't speak highly enough about the office and the work they've done with us and helping, people cause with real life problems.
Yep, absolutely. And then we have the General's Bridge lighting, tree lighting on Sunday as well. For active duty military, folks can come and write their loved ones' names on a ribbon and have it displayed on that tree throughout the holidays.
And we have the Housneck Lobster Trap tree lighting also on Sunday, right at sundown around 5 p.m. Santa's going to make a visit in Housneck. And as we know, this is Quincy. There's all kinds of tree lightings all over.
Yes.
Adam Shore, I believe, is also doing deer tree lighting this coming Saturday.
Yes, Quincy Point as well at the Four River Rotary on Sunday, and I think up at Safford Park in Wollaston too. So lots
Yep.
going on, yeah.
Lots going on in the neighborhood. So if you can't make a tree lighting at the General's Bridge or you missed the tree lighting this past weekend at City Hall, you'll have a neighborhood tree lighting, and the fire department will bring Santa along. And the local neighborhood schools and the city does a great job on, having a safe fun for families. This is one of the things the city, the mayor, the council, all the various departments will do a wonderful job at.
So obviously somebody used the contact information to get a hold of you, Tacky, so we should give that out again.
Sure, it's I'm at the State House. So you see me there a couple of times already on the podcast. I'll be actually there this afternoon for the going party of my good friend Paul Schmidt, who's retiring from the legislature, as well as the Gold Star tree family lighting. And actually tonight is the State House tree lighting
Yeah.
on top of everything else. So it's gonna be busy Christmas in State House today. But you can find me in room 42 at the State House. We are staffed 617-722-2370. 617-722-2370 is the phone number. Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. I do read my emails, as you guys found out. We do have State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook. We try to get some decent pictures of me somehow, being in various places. We do have tackychan.org, which also is a contact page. I have people reach out through that, as well as got a lot of spam through that now, which, yeah, I know it's interesting how the world works. The show, I got a lot of spam coming through my tackychan.org for some reason. We
You've got
also,
into somebody's algorithm or something. Yeah.
yeah, it's a contact fill-out page. I mean, it
Yeah.
comes straight to my email. So it's again, the 21st century, folks. You can't escape it. We also have the legislature website, malegislature.gov, malegislature.gov. It does allow you to track the bills, look at past recordings of sessions and hearings, and it has our rules up there in case you want to read them. They're on that page, a little bit tricky to get to, but you can find it, as well as other legislative resources. And you can sign up on the site to get news alerts and the things you're following along in the legislature. And of course, check with Joe in the morning for his 10-minute Quincy update. And we got the two of us to try to help and entertain and educate, or maybe just strictly entertain some days.
And give good cooking tips too.
And give you some good cooking tips on, well, maybe we just more cooking tips as we're kind of running out of things to talk about going into the holidays.
That's true.
But obviously, you can tell me and Joe really enjoyed the opportunity to talk to you through this medium. And we're hopeful that this is helpful. And of course, definitely reach out to me. But also, again, encourage you to reach out to Joe because it's sometimes good if you give Joe stuff because I won't know what's coming.
Aha! Let's play a little trick on Tacky.
That's all right.
Thanks a lot, Tack. Great to see you.
Good to see you. See you soon, Joe.